6 years ago, I was sitting in my cubicle in Indianapolis, working in a job for content on some e-commerce sites. And one day, my friend sent me this tweet, and it changed my whole life. So I moved to New York City and joined this little startup called BarkBox. Like in the intro, over the past 6 years, I've watched my company grow from 3 employees to over 400, from 2,500 subscribers to over 600,000. It's been an insane ride, and if you told me 6 years ago that I would be standing in this place saying these words, I never would have believed you. But I'm standing here today because many of the moments that we've had have been a result of luck and timing, and a whole lot of extroverted, passionate bulldozing on social media trying to find our tribe of dog people who are just as crazy about these little fart tornadoes as we are. So first of all, took a lot of work to get it up here, but I did want to give you a better sense of who Bark is, what we do, and how we use video to connect with all the dog nuts out there that are just like us.
Dogs. Wagging, splootin', beggin', tootin', tuggin', doofin', fetchin', stretchin', snackin', scratchin', lickin', diggin', sniffin', snuggin', smoochin', huggin' dogs. They make life better. Every person thinks they have the best dog in the world, and we agree with all of them. We're Bark, the company dedicated to making dogs as happy as they make us. And dogs make us really happy. Bark was started by these guys, because of these guys. Love those guys. In 2012, they created BarkBox.
You opened the BarkBox without me?
The first subscription service made just for dogs.
BarkBox came?
5 years and 60 million products later, we're making way more than the box. Decisions for their dogs, because everything we ship out must first be play tested and approved by upper management. Bark makes the most original, cutting edge, state of the fart dog stuff imaginable.
Literally so cute.
And the most thoughtful, trustworthy, lip smacking dog snacks on earth. Look, we're just a bunch of crazy dog people. And like you, we know that dogs are way more than pets. They're family. And they deserve the best toys, the best treats, the best life we can give them. At Bark, we want to be the people our dogs think we are. So we're going to keep our eyes on the ball and follow our dogs' lead by always remembering what they've taught us. Be good, make time for play, and for dog's sake, treat yourself. Bark. Dog people get it.
So that's Frank, our office dog. And I also forgot the most important part, which is my dog. My dog Pim was on the slide before. She is an awful little butthead, but I love her to pieces. She can jump over things like BarkBox, and she can also breakdance, but I'll get into that a little bit later. So as you can see, there's a lot of magic to talking about dogs on social media. And over the past 6 years, we've used organic social and especially video to run with that magic and create a huge passionate group of dog people centered around these creatures that have been our best buds for the past 30,000 years. The videos we create, curate, and share touch on something core to the beings of dog people: their outlooks, their ideals, their senses of humor, their love. And our strategy that got us here rarely, if ever, was about advertising. We're not doing the 20% off your first BarkBox stuff on organic. That just doesn't happen there. And if it does, then someone on my team is in trouble. It's about hitting on those core emotions. And out of all these numbers, we definitely work very hard on the subscriber number. We have an entire team dedicated to getting new customers. But these other two, they're just byproducts of the directional goal that we have of connecting with dog people. And in my 6 years of running the content team, the best stuff has come when we asked and delivered on what do dog people really want. So, and I also want to reiterate this with another one of my favorite examples. When a customer got a tattoo of one of our toys on her arm, it was her dog's favorite toy, And in our quest to reach all of these dog people, it's not about reaching them in a superficial way. Metrics and numbers don't mean anything if you just catch their attention for 10 seconds and then they don't remember that piece of content an hour later. For our social content, to our customer service, to our products, it also isn't just one single branch that creates this deep connection. It's about the symphony of all of them together that inspires someone like Paige to get her dog's favorite tattoo or her dog's favorite toy tattooed on her arm. And this is what we're after. This is the directional goal that we're trying to get. We're trying to give dog people the kinds of meaningful experiences that inspires them to do something drastic and crazy out of the love for their dog. So all of this aside, the number one goal is to connect with dog people. And so what does organic social do for Bark? And it does a lot of things, but mostly I've always thought about it as it's kind of the top of the funnel seduction stage. And when people are already customers, it's the flirting that keeps the relationship alive. It gives us an opportunity to connect with people in between the times where they have our products. And it also reminds them that we share the same values. So the first part of the seduction phase is get their attention in a crowded room. This can be everything from watching a video or us sharing a video of our blissed out office pug Noodle getting his belly scratched with 5 wooden back scratchers. It can also be a meme of 3 pit bulls napping on top of each other, to a photo of someone making matching friendship bracelets with their dog. This is not talking about products at all. This is just trying to get people to be like, oh, look at us. So the second phase is create an emotional connection. And this is the most important part. And this can be content from our Dog Mom Anthem that we launched last Mother's Day. It got 44 million views. To our fun social campaign, which you guys saw in the other little video, where we asked people to dance for their dog, just because. We try to be vulnerable in our dog craziness so that the true dog people see themselves in us. A huge core of our success as a business has rested in the fact that we've recognized and we're not afraid to reveal that we are absolutely insane people. And the other day I was talking to someone outside of the company and he asked, like, what makes you guys different from other pet companies? And what I said was, well, other pet companies are a little too scared to reveal like their like deep self. It actually, like, if you're not a dog person, you're probably listening to me up here being like, that girl is crazy. Like, that girl is kind of weird. All of the Bark social people, they're kind of weird, but that's okay. If you're a dog person, you see yourself in us. We're holding up a mirror to you and you have a deeper trust with us because you know that you love your dog, and the way that we're talking about it and revealing ourselves and being vulnerable, then you're like, oh, they are too. I like that. So, yeah, and so like another dog company would say like, dogs are funny, dogs are family, dogs deserve a good life. How we say it is like, oh my God, Ziggy, you're hogging the whole bed. Like, there's a difference to it, and that difference is really important. And then finally, we ask them out. We are still a company. We do want to talk about our products. We don't want to just be a dog meme account, and we have skewed that way a few times, but we do not sell on our organic social media. We'll talk about collection launches in a fun way. We'll show how people or squirrels are interacting with our products, but we follow the rule that if a piece of content has a product in it, it has to be cool enough that you would show it to the person sitting next to you. If not, then don't share it. The box isn't a prop. It has to be a piece of content that can stand well all on its own. And these tips can work even if you're not talking about the best topic in the whole universe, dogs. So another huge part of our success with video, being able to connect with a passionate group of dog people, is that we've had 50 different strategies in the past 6 years. I've had this pivoting philosophy for a long time, and it still feels like a really difficult decision every time I'm in the moment where you have to kill your darling, you have to kill something that has worked really well for the past 3 months, but it's not gonna work going forward, so you have to be ruthless with your mediums and the platforms that you put them on. So let me show you an example. So this is a graph of the video views that we've had over the past 16 months. And you can see we've had some pretty big peaks. Some months we were up in 80 million video views in that month. And then something happened last fall and it plummeted and it hurt. And it's just an example of like the things that do really, really well, they have a miserably short life. But that's just how social is. And I imagine that a lot of you, if you do focus on using video to grow your social strategy, a lot of your charts look like this because we've all been building our house on Facebook's land. Because of that, you have to constantly evolve what you're doing to stay relevant and not be boring. So just to show you a little bit of the past 6 years, and I didn't actually like realize how much we'd changed until I started working on this presentation. But in 2013 and 2014, that was the time when we had a media business, Barkpost. Our video strategy was we were finding other people's videos on YouTube, and we were driving traffic to articles with some jokes of our framing, and we got people to come to our site. These are videos like Beagle steals chicken nuggets from toaster, or Squirrel buries nut in the fur of a Bernese mountain dog. Like, great stuff, but we were driving to the traffic. And then, like the story of my whole career, Facebook changed the game and throttled everything that was going off of Facebook. So we had to change. It worked really well. We got up to 15 million unique visitors on barkpost.com, but we had to change it. So 2015 was our peak of branded content. All those companies like Upworthy, it was the highest BuzzFeed was at. We were able, because we were selling our branded partnerships, we were able to do a highly produced series like Dog's Best Day, where we brought in the last search and rescue dog from 9/11 and gave her this blowout sweet 16th birthday party, showed her around New York again. And we were able to pay for this because we had branded partnerships. But this video got picked up by the nightly news. It ended up getting us 240 million views across all of the different platforms. So that was a really special moment. That doesn't work anymore with the way that social media is structured. So we had to kill one of our most darlings. And then 2015, 2016, and 2017 have been all about memes. We also started creating some original produced content, like some of our music videos. And then again, like you saw in the graph, Facebook changed the game again, and that stuff doesn't work anymore. So today, we're focusing on getting users to create the content for us, but I'll get into that in a little bit. The TLDR of this is you have to recognize that success is fleeting, and the only way to continuously have success is to pivot. With video, we do everything we possibly can in the moment to catch a dog person's attention and bring them into the fold. Maybe they'll become a customer next month. Maybe they'll become a customer in 5 years when we build our Bark Jet to make it easier to travel with dogs. What matters is today we found someone who loves their dog just like we do. So tip number two, inspire people to do the work for you. So right now we're in a moment in time where if you think of content distribution as something that is broadcasted from one channel or profile, you're going to get crushed. The one thing that is working for us right now is, and within the algorithms, is creating, and I mean this in a good way, like create a good pyramid scheme and get people to do it for you. So with that, we use our customers, we use micro-influencers, and we get them to do our stuff. For us, there are three types of UGC that we look for, user-generated content. We look for influencer / customer UGC to use in ads. And sometimes when I say inspire people to do work for you, sometimes that inspiration comes with money. You can pay people to create content for you. And it's not a ton of money. We've gone from like being an insanely scrappy place where like I was in a windowless room in Chinatown doing my work to a place where we have a whole building. It doesn't matter. The rates that you can pay someone $50 and they can create an amazing piece of content for you, especially when it's related to dogs. Over the years, we've also worked really hard to build up these relationships with content creators who understand the goals and the attitude of what we're trying to do and get them to create the piece of ad content for us. And not only will they run it on their channels, and that's not actually as important as the asset that we get that we can end up using on our paid channels. And the really interesting thing about this, and it's also like the most infuriating thing, one of the most infuriating things about my job, is I can pay Caruso the Celebrity Dachshund $500 to make a pretty like epic ad that he made in his living room, and we can spend $5,000 making this produced commercial, and 9.5 times out of 10, Caruso's ad will dominate the one that we worked so hard to produce. So sometimes, like, it's a little counterintuitive. You think that, like, as a company, you're supposed to be really polished and really lofty and branded, but actually the most authentic thing works the best, and sometimes getting the most authentic thing is asking someone else to do the fun work for you. So the second kind of UGC that we solicit is content for entertainment and fun. And this is a lot of what I've been referencing before. We form relationships with these accounts, whether they're tiny, like they can have 50 followers. I don't care if their dog is really cute and there's a squirrel trying to bury a nut in its fur. Like, doesn't matter the followers. What matters is that the dog is awesome. Recently we found a dog, his name is, what was his name? Anyway, it's this lab and he's cross-eyed. He had like 20 followers. We were like, oh, this dog is awesome. And it's doing really well on our channels. And what we get out of it is an awesome piece of content to put up on our channels. And what they get out of it is, you know, we're a big account. When we feature a dog, we're throwing a lot of audience their way, and they're able to build up their account and have a lot of fun on social as well. And then the third part of UGC that we solicit is UGC focused on dogs interacting with our products. And this is the most difficult and complex of the three, but it's also one of the most fun and rewarding. So for the customer facing UGC, we put callouts everywhere. And we go above and beyond to explain the process and the experience to folks. So this is one of our newer initiatives that we're launching in the next month. Historically, it's been a card in the box, like, welcome to BarkBox Day, but we realized, like, oh, you're getting a box of toys and your dog is losing their mind. You're not paying attention to the collateral that's in the box. It also feels like messy. So we're actually shipping this out before you get your first box, and it explains the process. Then people are like, what is BarkBox Day? Oh, it's a thing. It's not, oh, this isn't just like going to Petco and getting a bunch of stuff. This isn't an Amazon box. This is an experience and a moment in time where I get to spend time with my family and with my dog. So it takes a lot of work to set that stage up to people. Additionally, like with the like welcome packet, there are three tips that when it comes to getting customers to create content for you. The first is be relentless, and that, you know, like I said, like, we put it everywhere. There's that principle in advertising where someone has to see something seven times before it actually connects with them. The same thing is true when we're trying to change how people interact with their BarkBox. The second is make it clear and easy. The customer should know exactly what you're looking for. And a funny thing about this tip, like, my whole career and our whole team, we've been so like overzealous about all of the things and all of the things we ask people to do, and it's just so exciting. It's like, do this with your dog, have fun with your dog doing this. So we've been a little scattershot a lot of times, and what we've realized is you need to just keep it simple and like contain your energy a little bit and be as concise as possible. We used to have a different hashtag for every box, things like King Arthur or Space Squirrels, or, you know, we would track the boxes on different hashtags each time. But what we realized is, one, our puns sometimes can cause spelling errors. Two, like, you have to like root around in the box and remember, like, what is this month's box? Is it like Knights of the Hound Table or is it King Arthur? Like, I forget which one. So we just started pushing hashtag BarkBox Day, much simpler. And we've seen, as we've been pushing that, we used to get around 5,000 people uploading each month on BarkBox Day or on the hashtag. Then it was up to 7,000. And then this last month we had 12,000, which is a lot of people uploading their experience to social media, the product. And then the third is make it fun. Like I said, like from our Knights in the Hound Table, we included this little crown that from the info card where you put it on your dog and you take a picture. With our baseball box, the info card was had a little punch out, and you use perspective. You know, you have your dog sit on the floor, and then the card is right here, and then you take the picture, and it looks like your dog is having in a little baseball card. We do things where we're just asking people to take a picture of their dog. There's a really important distinction. We're not asking people to take a picture of the BarkBox. We're asking them to take a picture of their dog. And like, I cannot wait for this box to come out because I can't wait to put a little corsage on my dog and kind of imagine her in this little story of prom coming out in June. So, and just to reiterate, like, as of this morning, we have 94,647 uploads on hashtag BarkBox Day, And we have 3,056,032 uploads on hashtag BarkBox. So it can work if you make it a fun experience and you're not being like overly brandy and salesy in your ask. And then the third thing, this is kind of related, but it's also one of my favorite examples. One final way you can get people to create content for you is you work your ass off creating a product for them. Go over the top, do too much. These are what we call our inception toys. We didn't know if they would work. No dog company has ever done a toy within a toy. I bet like 80% of the people who got this toy had no idea that there's another toy inside. But one of the things that happened as a result of this is we made the front page, the number one spot on Reddit 3 different times with a dog toy. So much so that people are thinking that we're doing corporate shilling on Reddit. And trust me, we are not seeding a thing on Reddit. Reddit is a terrifying place where like they will hunt you down. People are thinking that we're doing it already because the customers are so excited about it. And when you get in these threads, it's so clear like who is the Reddit person living in their mom's basement and who are the dog people, because the dog people are on there like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And then like downvote, 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 like how dare you, you know, promote corporate interests on Reddit. But these are really fun. So the third tip is always do entertainment over selling on social media. No one likes that person in the bar who comes up and you're just sitting there, you're trying to have a good time, and they come up to you and you're like, hey, you wanna buy my product? Do you wanna like go out on a date? Like you're like, whoa, calm down. Like I'm here to have fun and you're coming on a little strong. So people come to social media for entertainment. They come because we're bored. We wanna pass the time. Recognize that and play within the expectations of the user of what people want. And entertainment can come in many different forms. It can come in dog pictures and dog videos. It can come in the form of education. It can come in the form of sweet stories. It can come in the form of what the Walmart folks were talking about, like the executives being awesome ambassadors to the different communities. Or it can be funny, and I prefer funny. So, and since this tip is a little bit more of a philosophy than something with hardcore tactical tips, I wanted to show you how I communicate this to the team on an evolving process. One, on the entertainment versus selling, on each account that we run at Bark, we have like 15 different accounts. We have a different continuum of where that specific account sits on the engagement versus the resume. So engagement obviously is like getting a post to totally blow up. Resume is like, oh, here are all the products we make. They're for sale in Target. They're for sale on BarkShop.com. Each of the different accounts has a different continuum. And so BarkBox, we're much more focused. We want to show the products a little bit, but we're much more focused on engagement and virality. We don't really focus on that we're a business. We're mostly a dog cult, and we're trying to get people to join us in our dog cultiness. But every time we start to slip as a team, we get excited, and we kind of lose track of where we're going. We always bring this up and be like, okay, actually, we've slipped a little bit, and we're talking about the product a little bit too product-y. Let's like slide it back. Let's like do some weird stuff again. And then the best, most fun tip when it comes to entertainment overselling is just do dumb stuff. Do dumb stuff for the sake of fun. Don't track it. If it does well and if you're doing your job correctly, the score will take care of itself. And the odds are that those muscles that you flex in doing some of the dumb stuff that is for fun, that is getting laughs or telling good stories, those things that are based in passion will end up becoming the muscles that you use when you're coming up with your ads or your marketing strategy. And whether it's creating a commercial from the dog's eye view, like where we said, like, what would a dog want if we ran a commercial? It's like, oh, another dog's butt for 30 seconds. And that went over okay. But like, we have to try it. Some people got super mad at us. They were like, we got a phone call from a woman who was watching the Food Network, and she was like, you ruined my lunch because you put a dog's behind on the TV. We're like, okay, thanks. That's okay. She's not our customer. You're going to have that reaction if you're going in the passionate way. These things don't fit into a financial model. They don't have a direct line to the bottom line, but they matter a lot. And just to end, I pulled one comment that I keep in my notes all the time that I got from a customer about a year ago. So whenever I feel kind of a little disoriented, I come back to this. And this person said, I love the surprise box every month. The themes, the toys, the love, the rough and ready humor you have. You guys are having fun, and I love that in a company. It's like when you see a movie and you say, I bet those guys had fun making that movie together. Your products are hysterical and good and fun. I found you on a poop bag at the dog run. It's like one random thing. Like that was the thing where we were like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we put poetry about poop on poop bags and put it in dog parks across the country? Don't know if it works, but we got this email. We still don't know how it worked, but it was really cool and it was really special. And it just also was a fun project to work on. So in conclusion, entertaining is always better than selling. Get people to do the work for you. It will most likely be better than what you put together anyway. And don't ever be afraid to pivot. And like I said, this is my dog, Pim, and she breakdances. So I'll end it there if I can get my mouse over. Yeah. So that's my dog. Yeah, so if you can't hear, she asked, like, how do we collect and curate UGC? So we do a lot of different things. Some of them are very messy and ad hoc and sliding into dogs' DMs at 10 p.m. at night and not really tracking it. But we also have tools. We have two main tools that we use. One for tracking influencers is called Creator IQ. And then for getting permission for things to use in ads, we use this thing called Olapic. And then we also have some, like, sometimes like creatives and content people can be kind of hard to contain and get them to use specific tools. We also have an Instagram account that we use internally that it's private and we follow all of the dogs who have given us written permission. And then everybody has their favorite influencer and their favorite like person. Like people actually have friendship relationships with some of the influencers. So I have like 10 people that I've worked with the past 5 years, and I know I can call them up and be like, hey, Crusoe, can you help me out with this? Hey, Carter and Toby, can you help me out with this? So it ranges from, it's okay to be messy because that's how relationships and friendships are, but we do also have some organized tools to use it. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Are you guys doing any advertising for these videos, or is that all organic growth?
So we do advertising on, we use the Facebook pages to like actually get subscribers. That's a totally different section. We've, over the past 6 years, we've probably spent like $5,000 in total boosting some of the organic stuff. It's mostly organic.
Other questions? Maybe one more? No? Okay, well thank
you.
Sure.
That's okay. I'm curious, since you have this great mix of UGC and then also content that you produce in-house, but definitely leaning more toward the UGC, what does your typical content calendar look like? Like, what is that spread?
So the content calendar, we have, we'll have, like, specific campaigns, like National Dog Day, National Pet Month, 420, we have like those marked in our content calendar. We also have like Donut Day. I don't know. They're like dog days, and then they're like dumb days that we think are funny, and then there are like specific human holidays that like runs our calendar. But for the most part, it's pretty flexible. We can't, because you have to pivot quickly, we don't have it planned out usually more than a month or two in advance. And we've had people come in from outside the company and they're like, why aren't you planned out more? I'm like, because I don't know what's gonna happen. Like, we have to be flexible. And if you're asking tactically, it's just a lot of Google Docs.
Thanks, Stacy, for the time.
Thank you.